This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 6:13, Tim Zimmer, Manning Master Control, bringing us back with Seals and Crofts and Summer Breeze. Go feel anything like that. Right now it's 45, going up to 60 today. It was chilly yesterday. Now, the rain, as I understand it, happens primarily this evening, overnight hours, as you sleep, or as we all sleep, and then tomorrow, another cold front comes through. Rain may be lingering into the morning. Highs of 59. And Thursday, back to freezing temperatures on the North Shore. South Shore, not so much to worry about. But 32 for a low Thursday and Friday night. Highs of only 47. Then comes Saturday, highs of 56 and 58 on Sunday. Of course, that's the big parade weekend. We get started with that, right? So Friday evening, as you go out to the parades, is going to be chilly. Saturday, hopefully, they'll get them in with a 50% chance for showers, but we'll have to watch it either way. Highs are going to be in the mid-50s, so you'll have to wear a jacket and all that stuff. All right, here we go. David Schultz joins us, our friend, professor of political science and law at Hamline University. How you doing, David?
I am doing well, but it is really cold up here.
I feel like I'm on the old Tonight Show. How cold is it, David?
It is 12 below zero with a wind chill of 35 below zero.
It's so cold, you saw a dog stuck to a fire hydrant, didn't you?
I did, and the dogs are sticking to the sidewalks, too.
Wow,
I mean,
it's terrible.
It's brutally cold. I mean, most of the school, I don't know if you've ever had, outside of your snowstorm a few weeks ago, I don't know how often you've ever had like school closed because it's just too cold. And they're closing the schools here, K through 12.
Really?
For good reason. Yeah,
because
it's too cold.
Just because it's too cold? Not snow or accessibility or anything like that? Just.
Exactly, yeah, because the kids waiting out for the buses, it would just be too cold for the kids, you know, to hang out, you know, wait for the buses.
Man, let me tell you something. Back in the day, David, I would hang out for the bus. You see, that's how soft we've grown as a society.
Right.
In the day, I would hang out in literally 4-degree temperatures to catch the bus, and I lived in Panama, which was strange.
Right.
Anyway, let's talk about the government shutdown. What's going on here? What are the stakes, et cetera?
Well, first off, I'll say in theory and by law, and that doesn't mean anything, is that we were supposed to have a government budget by October 1st of last year that covers all of this year. The government's budget year is October 1st to September 30th. Well, in true form to what Congress has been doing for the last several years, budget wasn't done on time. They keep passing continuing resolutions to fund the government temporarily. And last year, I think was it like right after the election, they did another what's called continuing resolution to keep, you know, keep the lights on, to keep the government funding until I believe it's what, March 14th, if I'm correct. I may be off on the date a little bit here. And so what's going to happen is that if Congress doesn't pass another continuing resolution or a real budget by March 14th, then we will go into yet another government shutdown. And that's what's at stake at this point is an agreement. And what we have, as we all know, a polarized Congress, and within the polarized Congress, we have a divided Republican Party, of which there are some Republicans who know that they have a lot of leverage because of the narrow majorities, are holding out for certain pet projects or certain things they want. So what we have here is pretty significant stakes in terms of yet again government potentially shutting down.
And that's what I wanted to ask you about, the continuing resolutions. Is that because of a lack of leadership or primarily gamesmanship, play in the system, both, neither, what?
I think it's both at this point. It's the leadership issues coming, I'm going to say, from the president all the way down. When I say president, it's bipartisan. It was Biden. It was Trump before that, et cetera, et cetera. But it's presidents offering budgets that are generally unrealistic. You know, since this law has been in effect for how to do the budgets, goes back to 1976, I think there's only been, I can maybe off on it, one or two presidential budgets that have ever actually been adopted. And so presidents are proposing things that are totally unrealistic given the lay in Congress. And then once you get into Congress, members of Congress know how to game the system. They'll say that, and I'll make up something here, that I'll agree to this budget if I get a new bridge for my district, or I want this, et cetera, et cetera. And when we have the margins, especially in the House, they are so tight. You know, one or two defections, I think it's, what, two defections by Republicans at this point, and they don't have enough votes to do anything. So some people can really hold out. So it's gamesmanship. It's being unrealistic. It's lack of leadership. I would also say the entire process that we put into place 50 years ago is just fundamentally flawed. And so this is problem upon problem upon problem in terms of how all this operates.
I know a lot goes on and people sometimes conflate issues, but where does debt ceiling negotiation and raising the debt ceiling enter into this?
Well, that, I mean, on one level, they're technically separate, but on another level, they're very much connected. And the reason why I say that is that because, with the exception of a couple of years in the late 90s, we've been running deficits almost continuously, let's say, for the last 50 years, as anybody could figure out, if you keep spending more money than you're taking in, what do? You accumulate debt. And our debt ceiling is going up more and more and more. And again, So by the fact that we're not doing good budgeting and we're not balancing the budget, it raises the debt. Under this same 1974 law, I correct myself, a 1974 law about how to do the budget, it also requires that Congress have to raise the debt ceiling, which basically means authorization for paying debts that we've already incurred. Not for future debts, but already incurred. And what happens if we don't raise that debt ceiling? The government loses its ability to be able to spend money. And so these are separate, on one level, separate issues, voting for the budget, voting to raise the debt ceiling. But they really are connected to the same problem, which is lack of leadership, polarization, unrealistic budgets where we're spending more than we're taking in. So I know for most listeners out there, they're thinking, well, these are just the same thing. Well, Pretty close, but technically separate entities.
So for those...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
How can I phrase this? It's... On both sides, it's just a lot of bull is what it is. There's nobody. Everybody talks about, you know, Democrats and Republicans, about the debt of the country, this, spending that. The truth is they both spend like crazy. They want to spend on what they want to spend on or not collect, with tax cuts on whomever they want to not tax. And as a result, the typical working guy gets caught in the middle. Accurate or not? Working man or working woman?
I think it's absolutely accurate at this point. And I will even say that quote, mainstream economists for many, many years, I think, have also gone along with this. We're saying that, listen, well, you know, so long as we can manage our debts, you know, it's like at home. You know, we have to all figure out, like, if we buy a house or we buy a car, you know, how much debt can we, you know, can we incur, you know, before it's too much? Mm-hmm. And economists for years kept saying, not a big problem, not a big problem. And suddenly now you're getting economists saying, my God, we owe, what, over $30 trillion? It's probably even higher now or something like that. $30 trillion in debt. We're paying a lot on interest at this point. Maybe it's a problem. But at the end of the day, it's exactly as you said here, is that in Congress, all the members of Congress want to say, gosh, everybody else is getting pork. What I'm getting for my district is really important stuff that my constituents want. Put it all together, and there's almost no collective action incentive to really bite the bullet and do stuff that we need to do.
All right, let me take a break. We come back. I know you're also a professor of law. 14 states sued Elon Musk and President Trump about Doge, and I see things on Facebook from people just blindly aligning themselves behind Elon Musk and Doge, and others blindly disputing what he's doing, and I'm sure the truth is somewhere in between. To me, an analogy would be when you see, like, the sequester. Remember when we had the sequester and they had across-the-board cuts? That always, to me, just smacked logic in the face, because that makes no sense. What you're saying is you might be cutting things that are really good programs because you don't want to pick winners or losers or what are good programs and what are bad. So you just want to cut everything while, meanwhile, you continue to fund something that shouldn't be funded. And that never did make sense to me. More with David Schultz when we come back. 622 Traffic Now, WWL. Hi, 627, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with our friend David Schultz, professor of political science and law at Hamline University. 14 states filing a lawsuit against Elon Musk's authority at Doge and Donald Trump. I would guess, matter of fact, I would bet my 401k Louisiana is not one of the states in that 14 group of 14 filing suit. Tell me what's going on with Elon Musk. Does he have any can the president grant him any authority he wants? Is the president merely acting on Elon Musk's recommendations, and therefore Elon Musk doesn't have any authority? David?
Okay, I'm going to do, first off, he doesn't have any official authority because he's not a government official, and Doge is not an official government agency. And by the way, one of those states suing is probably mine in Minnesota. But he doesn't have authority to do things. But nonetheless, he's exercising incredible.
Is he just advising the president?
He's supposedly advising the president, but it's looking like, if my accounts in the news are correct, you know, he's making requests, making orders for a variety of things to for government agencies to do. Seems to be behind making recommendations about laying off. But ultimately, I guess the question is going to become, first, is he merely making recommendations to the president who's making those orders? That's going to be, you know, factually, we need to clarify that. It's just not clear at that point. You know, I'm speaking like a law professor. We need to get clear on the facts here. Yeah. And two, even if he is relaying that information to Trump, is Trump acting on it? Is Trump acting legally and doing everything he's doing at this point based upon Musk's recommendations? And so we need to do a lot of fact clearing. And I think that may be one of my statements for this morning, is to say, is that there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of noise out there, whether it's on the social media and in the newspapers and so forth. And, you know, in newspapers, television, et cetera, want to get stories out. But I will just simply say that occasionally, maybe more often than not, they're not getting all the facts out that we need to know. And part of what we kind of hope courts can do is clarify some of this in terms of who's actually doing what to whom, and et cetera, like that.
It would seem to me, if I'm a government employee and I get a memo from Elon Musk telling me to do something, that's what I should do with it, because I don't work for Elon Musk. However,
exactly,
if I get a memo from whomever it is that I work for telling me that, per the president, et cetera, so I can see where it's got to be removed. Elon Musk can't tell anybody to do anything. However, I don't know that there's any constitutional provision preventing anybody from getting in any president's ear and making suggestions, is there?
We kind of hope that the public, if I were to write a letter and say, dear president, do X, and the president reads my letter and says, yeah, it's a good idea. Isn't that kind of the idea of representative democracy? I get to petition my government and write to them and say, do X or don't do X.
One would think. Thank you, David. A pleasure as always. David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University. 6:30, we'll talk about vaccinations and the Department of Health and more when we come back. Right now, it's time for WWL First News.